Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Police arrested and then promptly released Stormy Daniels last week. She was accused of rubbing her breasts on an undercover vice officer, violating the Community Defense Act. Daniels, an adult film star, is known for her claims that she had an affair with Donald Trump before he was president. In March, she sued him after speaking out about the affair. She's attracted media attention, and her lawyers said her arrest was politically motivated. Andrew Welsh Huggins is a reporter for the Associated Press. He covered the story this past week. Welcome back.
Good to be here, Ann. Thanks.
She was arrested after her performance at Sirens. Can you give us a rundown of what happened?
Right. So she does perform quite a lot around the country, including in Ohio. She had been at Sirens, this club, late in the night, and she had done her performance along with a couple of other women. She'd left the stage, and I guess unbeknownst to her, some of the patrons that she was touching were undercover Columbus Vice officers. She left the stage. She went out. She travels in a quite large tour bus, the kind of thing you'd see taking people to, a big casino or something that mm-hmm. crosses the country. And when she was there, the police knocked on the door and issued the arrest warrant under this Community Defense Act.
Right. The Community Defense Act. What exactly did she violate? It was just the touching part?
Yeah, the act says that there's no touching when you're performing when you're regularly performing nude or semi-nude at a particular, at a dancing club. And what they alleged that she violated was this touching, and it's pretty graphic touching if you read the complaints. I mean, she and the other ladies were bare-breasted and were touching their breasts to the undercover vice officers' faces. So that's what we were talking about with that, and that's what she was accused of violating. The loophole there was that her lawyer was able to argue that she was not a regular dancer at that club, which the statute requires, which is why within hours of her arrest that the charge was dropped.
The question as well is whether or not vice officers were at the club just by chance. They say this was part of a deeper investigation into human trafficking, but I haven't seen anything clear about the connection between that.
Right. So the police response was, we have been investigating reports of trafficking and illegal activity at strip clubs for several months now, and this was part of an ongoing investigation that had nothing to do with whether Stormy Daniels was dancing there or not. We asked the Franklin County Municipal Court for data on this particular charge, mm-hmm. And what we found out is that, in fact, there have been, on the very same charge that Stormy Daniels was arrested on, that this year alone, this is just Franklin County, there were 23 other cases brought with that exact charge. Now, that does include those arrests that night. And last year, there were 14. And then in 2016, I believe there were 6. So initially, there was a lot of suggestion that this had never been used in Franklin County and that they'd used it for the very first time on Stormy Daniels and these other two women. And that's not true. They have been using it, and the records do show that this year they've been using it a lot.
What does that have to do with human trafficking?
Well, the concern with these clubs is that while they're advertised as essentially dance clubs where women strip, typically strip until they're bare-breasted, that, the idea is that, this is just a dance club. It's a perfectly legal activity, and this is where mostly men go to watch. But the concern, obviously, is that there's all sorts of illegal activity going on. I'm not saying that this was alleged against these specific mm-hmm. clubs, but the idea is, the women, maybe there's a back room. Maybe they strike side deals with customers, and essentially that's prostitution. And the trafficking element would come into play if the women who were dancing there were essentially somehow being coerced, whether economically or through being controlled by some other means.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Adult film star Stormy Daniels, she attracted attention in March when she sued President Trump, claiming he never signed a non-disclosure agreement that keeps her from discussing an alleged year-long affair before he ran for president. She attracted attention again last week when Columbus police vice officers arrested her after a performance at a Columbus strip club. The charges were dropped early the next day, but her lawyer has claimed that police were out of line. We're looking at the job of a vice police officer right now, the challenges they face, and we're talking right now with Andrew Welsh Huggins. He's a reporter for the Associated Press who covered the Stormy Daniels incident last week. There were some accusations that these arrests were unwarranted, and Columbus Police Chief Kim Jacobs is launching an internal investigation. What are people saying they did wrong?
Well, first of all, the chief's position is that the officers were doing their jobs correctly and that they had probable cause to make this arrest. But she's acknowledging that there was an error made in this argument raised by the lawyer that Daniels was not a regular dancer. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't quite have enough to actually carry out the arrest. So she has acknowledged the language of something like, you know, an error was made, but she's defending the officers. Now, what has happened is that immediately in the hours after this, social media took over and there were a number of reports that some of the officers may have had a pro-President Trump bias. And there were screenshots of Facebook or Facebook pages under pseudonyms allegedly attached to some of the officers that were floated around. And this was an accusation that Stormy Daniels' attorney raised pretty early on Twitter. The chief has acknowledged that they have heard those allegations, but she is in no way confirming them. But she's said they're going to do an internal investigation just to make sure that everything was above board. So that's where the secondary controversy has come. So first of all, there was the idea that she was somehow targeted in some kind of sting. The second allegation is that at least one of the officers may have had a pro-President Trump bias, and that's why she was arrested. So that's what the police are dealing with and looking into right now.
And an arrest like this, you know, and the perp walk and all that cast dispersion on her credibility.
That's right. You know, there's a video of her being taken into jail that one of the TV stations was able to get. And there was a brief flurry of activity where we thought she was going to be appear at a court hearing the next day. But, you know, that never happened because the charges were dismissed probably within about 10 hours, I'd say.
Now, what's to come of this internal investigation? Is this something that the chief will report out?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be eventually reported out. It's probably important to note that Columbus Division of Police does internal investigations all the time on officers based on various allegations regarding various arrests. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be a report at some point. I should note that the head of the Columbus FOP, Jason Pappas, has come out very strongly in support of the officers and said that the idea that this had anything to do with politics is completely without basis and that the officers were hardworking vice officers. And he notes that two of the officers were women, one of the officers was black. And so he's saying that the idea that this was a sting or somehow related with politics is without merit.
Has Jason Pappas ever criticized anything one of his members has done?
Well, I guess I can't comment. I don't know if he has or not, but his job is to, you know, job as a union president is defend his force.
They deal with a lot of dangerous crimes like guns and drugs and that kind of a thing. We're going to be talking more about how vice officers are trained and what their job is. But how much latitude do you understand they have in deciding where they're going to go on any given night to do their jobs?
I don't know that much about it, but I think the idea is that in this scenario that they were following up on tips that they'd received over several months that there was potentially illegal activity going on at strip clubs, perhaps this strip club, while in no way saying that was true. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they were following up on. They were undercover, so presumably they looked like any regular patron.
And did they correct me if I'm wrong, but did they do any baiting? Did they encourage the behaviors that the dancers were eventually arrested for?
You know, that's a good question. It's unclear in the complaints if that was the case. In the Sirens performance where the arrest came, I mean, there was a lot of very physical interaction between Stormy Daniels and these three vice officers, the kind of thing, you know, you probably don't want to tell your mom about. Mm-hmm. But it's unclear, you know, it appears that that was part of the act. And I don't think this is the first time that Stormy Daniels has done this kind of thing. And it's definitely worth noting that the following night, when she reappeared at a second Columbus strip club, they were adamant before she came on. An announcer said many times, absolutely no touching. There will be no phones, no photography, no touching. And, you know, her performance was, I guess, by strip club performances, pretty pedestrian.
What about the other two women who were arrested with her?
They're still charged, but they have representation, and their attorney is pushing to get those charges dropped.
They believe that, or they have said, or their attorneys have said, and always correct me if I'm wrong, but that the law that the vice officers are relying on in these arrests is unclear. It's ambiguous and nebulous.
Well, it is. You know, that's their position. This is about a 10-year-old law.
Right.
And you could argue that it's ambiguous just because while police thought they had valid probable cause to arrest Daniels, they were quickly able to say, well, the law says someone who routinely dances. And, you know, I don't know how you improve on that. Do you quantify it even further to say if you
at least
dance,
once a week,
yeah,
at least once a month,
once
yeah,
a week,
whatever.
Twice a week, and you touch, then you're liable. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's one of the problems with these types of vice laws.
Yeah. Well, I want to say thanks to Andrew Welsh Huggins for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Good to be here, as always. Thanks.
Andrew Welsh Huggins, reporter for the Associated Press. We're going to continue our conversation about what Vice does, what their jobs are in the year 2018. So stay with us. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Columbus police officers arrested and then released adult film star Stormy Daniels last week. Daniels, who has alleged she slept with President Trump before he was president, was charged with violating the Community Defense Act. This law was passed in 2007, and it bans entertainers from touching patrons and vice versa. Vice police officers arrested Daniels and other entertainers at Siren's Gentlemen's Club. These officers police drugs, guns, and human trafficking, but how they interact with the community they protect, that's what we're going to talk about today. Joining us by phone is Angelina Spencer. She's CEO of Empowerment Enterprises. That's a government relations firm in Washington, D.C. She's also a former club owner and entertainer in Ohio. Welcome to the show, Angelina.
Thanks for having me on.
Also, Bruce Myers, he is a former commander of the Central Ohio Drug Enforcement Task Force and Police Academy commander for Columbus State Community College's Police Academy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Can you help? You help teach police recruits, right?
I do.
What's the difference between your everyday police officer on the beat and a vice officer?
I think the job responsibilities or expectations are considerably different. Obviously, a patrol officer is involved in primarily answering calls for service, whatever they may be, whereas the work of a narcotics officer, vice officer, what have you, is more focused on that specific area.
And vice. What do we mean by vice in 2018?
That's an excellent question. Times are a-changing. Typically we think of vice, we think of sex, drugs, gambling, those types of things. But we've seen in the last 10 years quite a step back from a lot of those areas.
Is it hard for an individual to pass judgment on what is a vice?
perhaps for an individual, but I think officers, generally speaking, are have some guidelines in terms of the law and policy, whatever the practices may be within their agency or organization.
Angelina Spencer, when somebody starts in the business, is it a dancer in a club like this, how much do they learn? How much are they trained on what the law is?
Well, you can get a very liberal education, but you are usually told, and it depends on the clubs, right? So and I agree with the commander, because I'm actually married to somebody in law enforcement, and I'm also a vetted volunteer for a sheriff's office. But when you go into the business, you tend to be young, and there tends to be an inverse relationship between youth and earning potential. And people go into that to have fun. So, for example, I was told when I started at the tea house in Sandusky, Ohio, that you are not allowed to touch patrons. And it was pretty, and this was way before the Community Defense Act was passed.
Uh-huh.
However, there were always the rumors, the myths, the innuendo about regarding adult clubs and, oh, there's back rooms and there's beds back there and there's all kinds of things going on. And I think that strippers get just about as much scrutiny and flack as police officers do. So, you know, good club operators really strive to run above board clubs because they're about entertainment, not enslavement. They're about giving people an option above minimum wage, so they don't have to be victims of minimum wage.
That's an interesting comment that Angelina Spencer made, Bruce Myers, that strippers get as much scrutiny as police officers do. And you kind of nodded and went,
I'll have to say that's a fair statement.
Yeah. There's so much, there's so much suspicion of other kinds of crimes going on around strip joints. Angelina Spencer, you're saying that's not really the case.
I'm not saying that's the case.
Okay.
I'm saying that, like the commander said, you have laws on the books against prostitution, which prostitution and human trafficking are not the same thing. So, yes, if there's an instance of a club that is committing, they have beds in the back, let's say. I've never heard of one doing that, but let's say that's the case. I'm very confident that the police would enforce the law and laws under the books would prevail. But usually that was not the case. It was pretty tame when I worked. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. Okay, yes, I had a lot of fun. And I used that business as a stepping stone rather than a tombstone. I wasn't some degraded, objectified victim. You know, for me, I didn't want to work for $3. I'm dating myself now, but I did not want to work for $3.85 an hour at a mall pet store. I wanted opportunities to go to college, which I really did do. So, you know, strippers are, and people who work in the adult entertainment industry, they're like cops. We come from every walk and segment of society. Some of us hold financial portfolios that would make Merrill Lynch jealous, and others of us, there's some. We had you putting dent with a wrecking ball when it comes to the exercise of common sense. And I won't put words in the commander's mouth, but he's probably encountered that on the police side of work, too.
Bruce Myers? Yeah, okay. You can't hear it. Okay. We have a little bit of a technical difficulty here in the studio. So how do you teach officers to distinguish? What are they looking for when they go into a club to gather information or evidence of other kinds of crimes going on? Bruce Myers?
Typically, from what we used to do, you would take a look at any kind of complaints you had initially. That's usually going to bring them onto the radar. A lot of times, too, you will gain information from confidential informants. An individual gets jammed up on a charge, maybe not a particularly serious one. They want to work that charge off, so to speak. So they'll give you information about this or that that may be going on. It could be drug trafficking. It could be activity at a bar, a business, a club, whatever the case may be.
How do vice officers prioritize? Is there a ranking of what's more important on any given evening?
Well, certainly you're going to look at what's timely, you know, what's exigent, what do I have to act on now in terms of the ability to make a case on that. Also issues of risk to the public, you know, would also have a lot to do with it. And the strength of the case would obviously push something up the priority list. If I have a case here that's essentially made itself and fully developed, I'm going to act on that before I go out and spend weeks or months developing a case that, yeah, maybe it's significant. Maybe I can successfully complete it. Maybe I can't.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about what vice officers do and the relationship they may have or what it has to do with strip clubs. My other guest is Angelina Spencer. She's CEO of Empowerment Enterprises. That's a government relations firm in Washington, D.C. She also was a dancer in Columbus and owned a club in Ohio. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What about the issue of entrapment? What are vice officers taught about where you draw the line on something like that?
From my point of view, you have to be very careful that you don't coerce a subject, for lack of a better term, into committing the offense.
Coerce is a different word, though. What about if you bait them into something? That's a little different, isn't it?
Finally so. You don't want to create a situation where it could be argued they would not have otherwise done whatever the offense was.
That's like entrapment.
Precisely.
Yeah. Do you think that necessarily vice officers walk away from academy knowing that?
No.
Vice officers, typically, that's not their first job anyways, right?
No, not at all.
But they do go undercover a lot.
Yes, and typically vice officers, they not in all cases. I've seen several instances where it wasn't true, but typically they've got some time on. You know, they've had some street experience. They're not naive. They're not going into this wide-eyed, you know, thinking it's like something they saw on television.
Again, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Angelina Spencer, are you with us?
I am with you. Can you hear me?
Yeah. When police come into an establishment, are they obvious?
Well, that depends on how you that depends. When I co-owned a club in Cleveland, we always hired off-duty uniformed officers for our security.
Okay.
And that was allowed in Cleveland, and we welcomed that. And we had a great relationship with law enforcement, which I think is key when it comes to these vice storms, these vice-related type of issues. So we really had a great relationship in the Cleveland area, and it's, you know, it'd be great. I don't know if Columbus does that or not, or Franklin County, but that seems to be really good. We also have something called COAST, which is Club Operators Against Sex Trafficking, where for the last 10 years, we've worked directly with federal agents at Homeland Security investigations. They come into the clubs and they teach workers about the indicators of human trafficking. So I'm an ardent proponent of police and the strip club community, you know, police working with the strip club community, because then it puts faces to everybody. And, you know, there's a little bit of derision here when it comes to the Community Defense Act. I don't blame the police for the Community Defense Act. You know, that was a law that was given to Ohio by the Citizens for Community Values. And that law was pushed by an attorney who makes a living around the country promoting the Community Defense Act under the ruse of protecting women. Well, if you really want to protect women, give them legislation that provides them opportunities above minimum wage and job growth. So, and don't arrest them arbitrarily. And my other question would be, how many men get arrested if the touch law is violated in a strip club.
What about that, Bruce Myers? It's been an issue for a long time that, sex workers of one type or another, they're targeted, but the Johns or whoever the customer is not.
That has been the case from my observations for quite a while. I think it's changing, though. Mm-hmm. I think it goes back to the drug enforcement issue. Do we target the users or do we target the dealers? Well, it's kind of a similar play on that. There are some cities across the country now that are targeting the customers, if you will, mm-hmm. to see if that has any more of a better benefit. Many times a lot of customers have more to lose in terms of maybe professional reputation or some other factor that they simply don't want it known that they are, in fact, a customer.
You know, Angelina Spencer mentioned that when she co-owned the club in Cleveland, that off-duty Cleveland police officers were part of their security detail there. Do you know if that's something that has to be allowed by a department, if that's the case in Columbus or not?
I can't speak to what Columbus's policies might be on that.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about the idea that if you don't have anything to hide, having an off-duty police officer is a good way to achieve that?
Don't see any issue with it all. A lot of agencies do have off-duty officers working security at all kinds of establishments, bars and what have you. I don't see an issue with you. And frankly, I think it works out pretty well.
Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi. And I'm a former male stripper. And I was hearing earlier about the discrepancy in why men are allowed to be touched versus the women. And honestly, it's the way the law is written. It says that as long as the worker is not employed by the club, they are allowed to touch and be touched. And there are no male strippers in Columbus that are employed by a club or a bar.
Okay. So that's I actually was talking about the customers, but I see what you're saying, that they have to
be. Well, they can touch us and we can touch them because we are not employed by the club or bar.
That sounds like, I suppose, less protection?
Yes. Yes, very much so.
You know, Angelina Spencer, what do you think about that? Is that the case that you, as you understand it, is that typical?
Well, this is one of the things that the commander talked about at the beginning. Now at what point, and it's just like if he were pulling over someone under a statute that had opioids, normally that law applies to everyone. It's illegal to be driving around with heroin. So in this case, you have a law that says if you're not a regular worker in a club, the law doesn't apply to you. But if you're a regular worker in a club, the law does apply to you. So it applies to some members of society. It's not an equal law. It applies to some, but not to others. Hmm. How can that be?
Yeah, that's a good question, Bruce Myers.
it's a very good question and one I don't have an answer for.
Angelina Spencer, I mean, you remember when the bill was going through the legislature. What did you make of that? Do you know why there was a distinction made like that?
I don't know why there was a distinction made by that. I only have my personal opinions. Mm-hmm. But we did have a strong push by the Citizens for Community Values. And by the way, the FOP at the time actually sent a letter to the Ohio legislature saying, please don't pass this. It will be a waste of our time and resources and taxpayer money. Mm-hmm. So, and that really seems like this is what it's turned out to be like. So during the Community Defense Act, and I'm a limited government person here, so during the Community Defense Act committee hearings, mm-hmm. we were set. I had testified. My ex-husband was a firefighter of the year, as a matter of fact, up in Cleveland. And we had testified against the legislation. And we also had Sergeant Matt Petrie testify, and he was getting ready to be deployed to Iraq. And he said, and I'll never forget this quote because I thought it was great. He worked security in a club, and he was getting ready to be deployed. And he said, as we fight for your freedoms abroad, please do not restrict them at home. And the chairman at the time was ready to kill the bill. And there was panic with somebody at the CCV who ran upstairs, and they called an unprecedented recess on this committee. and they stopped all testimony, and then they tried to take it private. They were going to have closed testimony. And then I marched down with media and so in a letter to the speaker saying, you know, the public deserves open hearings on this. This is BS. So we'd have the public hearings, but I think the minds were already made up because at the time, go ahead.
No. I'm just interested in this distinction. And before I let you go, I mean, wonder, Angelina Spencer, what your thoughts are about the distinction between somebody like Chris. He's an ex-male stripper. You know, he didn't have the same, if you want to see the Community Protection Act as, or Community Defense Act as a protection for strippers,
right,
for dancers, he didn't have the same kind of protections. And I'm just wondering why that distinction.
Well, and it's a great question. And I don't.
We don't know.
So I think, you know, something definitely worth further exploration. But you know, I'd love to see a repeal of that act, because there were enough laws on the books that the police could do their job. And frankly, if somebody's running a rampant strip club, the laws that were already on the books could take care of the problem. And the joke in this industry is we're the second most regulated industry next to nuclear power.
All right, Angelina Spencer, thanks a lot for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Angelina Spencer is the CEO of Empowerment Enterprises. It's a government relations firm in Washington, D.C. She's also former co-owner of a strip club in Cleveland and a former dancer herself. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation with Bruce Myers. He's commander at the Columbus State Community College Police Academy and more. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the role of police vice. They handle some of the more dangerous assignments, drugs, guns, human trafficking, but how they are trained and how they are assigned their jobs can vary from department to department. Training for police officers has changed over time, so we're going to talk about how that's changed. Still with us is Bruce Myers. He's commander at Columbus State Community College Police Academy. And joining us by phone is retired Chief Frank Straub. He's Director of Strategic Studies at the Washington, D.C. based Police Foundation. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
How, Chief Straub, has training for vice officers changed over time? Because certainly our thoughts about vice has changed over time.
Well, I think you're right, Ian. I think the training is reflective and consistent with the changes in how we look at vice. So I think we start with training around use of force is a particularly concerning issue for individuals that are working in undercover capacities. Frequently they are supported by backup teams, but they're all alone in maybe a time of immediate crisis. When I was the Deputy Commissioner of Training for the New York City Police Department, for example, within the police academy, we had a special unit that just focused on the defensive tactics for undercover officers. Certainly, the technology has changed tremendously since, when I was active in law enforcement and did undercover work myself in terms of the size of recording and transmitting devices. I think we live in a time that is very sensitive to, and rightfully so, to protecting the rights, constitutional rights of the individuals we're engaging with. And when you talk about human trafficking and prostitution issues, in many communities, the emphasis has shifted away from the prostitutes to the Johns, mm-hmm. As well as to not so much about the arrest per se, but how do we identify these individuals and connect them to services, particularly when it comes to the area of human trafficking, right? How do we help these individuals who in many ways are captives and can't get away from individuals that are trafficking them and making money because of the power that they hold over these individuals.
Seen less as perpetrators and more as victims themselves.
Well, that's exactly what they are, right? They are victims. And we see that over and over again, and I applaud the efforts of the federal government and law enforcement more generally to recognize the victimization of minors, of young women, of new immigrants to this country, and change that focus to the connection to services and getting them out of the business, per se.
Does this require, Bruce Myers chime in, more sensitivity training for vice than maybe that had been in the past?
There's a degree of that. There's been a tremendous push in the curriculum the last few years for human trafficking offenses. Community diversity, procedural justice training has been newly mandated. A lot of that's being pushed out for required training for in-service officers. And for the last couple of years, it has been for academy cadets statewide.
How much training, Frank Straub, of all of this comes from a police academy versus what a department, a city public safety department is doing?
I think that what we're really talking about is more specialized training. So I think what my colleague said, there's this general training in the academy and police academies around procedural justice, implicit bias, general lesson plans around human trafficking and undercover work. But I think much of it unfolds when someone is selected or volunteers to take on one of these undercover or plainclothes assignments. That's when you typically see the specialized training to equip the officers with the skill sets that they need to carry on their duties and responsibilities, but also to do so in a way that keeps them safe as well as best as possible to the persons that they're interacting with.
When, granted, I only have watched it on television kind of a thing, but it seems like a lot of vice officers tend to be younger. Because that's the ilk, that's the demographic that's engaged in a lot of these activities. So how do you, they're younger, but you're saying they're also more extensively trained, Bruce Myers, and often they volunteer. How is a good vice officer selected?
It's not easy. You really have to walk a fine line. To be successful at this kind of work, you've got to be aggressive. That's easy for young people. The other issue, though, is when you're younger and you really have to be careful with your selection, you are exposing that person to vice. Every temptation imaginable is right there.
Corruption's well documented.
And you really, really have to be careful trying to find people that are aggressive yet resistant to that.
Yeah. And Chief Straub, what do you look for? What signs do you see, or maybe what signals of warning go up when you are thinking about, or when you think in terms of selecting someone for vice?
So I think, again, we're looking for somebody that really has a lot of self-confidence, that is aggressive, that has the ability to control their behavior. Because they're by themselves in these very intense, challenging situations. But I think one of the big sea changes that's happened over time is around the mental health issues of these officers and having somebody there who is a monitor mentor for the officers to make sure that they don't drift too far afield, if you will. So closely monitoring how they're doing in their assignment, how they're doing with the temptations that Bruce mentioned. That changes with the intensity of the assignment. So there are officers that, you know, go out in the afternoon and do some street level buys, and they're really plain clothes officers with a backup team. Mm-hmm. Then there are officers that, in some cases, brand new officers that never go through the police academy. They're selected at the application phase to do what we would refer to as deep undercover work. And purposely, they're not exposed to the police academy so that they don't pick up some of the attributes of being a police officer. Hmm. Those type of individuals are extremely closely watched. Other officers who are maybe 2, 3, 4 years into their career, again, get specialized training, but they're also, if they're in a capacity where they're really undercover and they're not functioning as police officers per se, right? They're living this lifestyle. They're fully engaged in the drug world or human trafficking world or organized crime world. Those officers work incredibly closely with a contact officer who's one of their main responsibilities is to monitor that officer's mental health to make sure that they have whatever they need to survive in many ways these extremely difficult and challenging job assignments.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like going to the dark side and having everyone convinced that you're part of that ilk.
That's how you survive. You do in many ways go to the dark side, and you know it becomes your life in many ways. And I think we've seen historically officers who have, you know, lost their careers, have lost their families, in some cases, unfortunately, have been arrested and prosecuted. And so, you know, being able to walk that tightrope of being fully engaged and exposed to criminal activity 24 hours a day and still trying to have your family, your friends, and a life becomes exceedingly difficult. And hence that importance of good training, important selection, maybe some psychological testing going into it, and then having that contact officer who becomes, in many ways, your life blood, your lifeline to the world outside of your undercover assignment, that becomes essential.
There have been some changes, but we know in Columbus, they're looking for more diversity on the police force. Bruce Myers, is there a sense about how the changing demographics of a vice unit affects its ability to do its job? More women. We know that 2 women were on that detail at the Sirens strip club in Columbus when Stormy Daniels was arrested. Some people were surprised at that, but be that as it may, are there enough women? Are there enough minorities? Enough people of color? Enough people from other places?
And I'm dating myself a bit, but mm-hmm. when I was working, I was desperate. I would have loved to have had a couple female agents.
Why?
Simply because they can open doors that sometimes guys can't. There were times that I would, one occasion I remember I pulled a regular street officer off for a couple of evenings. She could get into doors that I couldn't, or none of my guys could. Mm-hmm. So that diversity is huge.
Yeah. Have you noticed any big changes on that score, Frank Straub?
No, I think, you know, as we continue to diversify police agencies, I think it helps in terms of creating opportunities for women and persons of color to engage in those activities. And I agree 100% with Bruce. There are some places that you need a person of color. You need somebody of a specific ethnic origin. You need a female to be able to engage in undercover activities.
We read that recruitment is down almost across the country. How does that, Frank Straub, affect recruitment to a vice unit?
I don't know that it necessarily has a direct correlation. I think that we continue to be served in this country by men and women that are incredibly professional, that are incredibly dedicated to keeping their communities safe, to keeping this country safe from criminal activity. And so I think there will always be a good pool of potential undercover officers, vice officers, narcotics officers, because we do continue to have incredibly talented women and men in this profession. Recruiting is a challenge. Policing, I think, is a very difficult, complex profession. I think it continues to move in that direction. But I also hold out great hope that young people will continue to be encouraged and will continue to seek out public service and will continue to seek out law enforcement, recognizing its invaluable role and the critical role that it plays in our communities.
Do you agree, Bruce Myers?
I would have to. Absolutely, I agree. I've seen, we had a little dip in interest, even in enrollment in educational opportunities. But that seems to be passing. The numbers are starting to creep up again. So I think the chief's absolutely correct.
You know, sometimes I wonder with Me Too to a certain degree, but Black Lives Matter, that entire movement, I wonder if it's, yeah, there's going to be a downtick because of what happened and there's the distrust is out there. But I'm also wondering if it's not attracting a different kind of person to law enforcement, Frank Straub, you know, people that might not have done it before all of these troubles.
I think it absolutely is. In my work across the country, I've met a number of officers who said that they became police officers because they believed it was necessary to change the system from the inside. That activism on the outside is certainly important, but they believed that by being part of the system, by becoming police officers or troopers or sheriff's deputies or federal agents, that they could help bring about change. And so those movements, I think, have had consequences, both good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we are seeing a lot of very talented people come forward and say, hey, I'm going to be part of it, and that's how I'm going to move the profession forward.
Well, retired police chief Frank Straub, I want to thank you for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you for the opportunity. And Bruce, good luck with the work you're doing. It's incredibly important to train our new officers.
Frank Straub's director of strategic studies at the Washington, D.C.-based Police Foundation. Also, Bruce Myers, commander at Columbus State Community College Police Academy. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time, Bruce.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.